I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is BusinessWise. Today, my guest is Ohio Tax Commissioner Joe Testa. Joe, we're hearing a lot of discussion about income tax cuts, and coupled with this whole discussion about severance taxes, fracking. You know, I'm a CPA. I'm not quite sure exactly what fracking means. How and why should people care about fracking?
Well, I think there's two things to think about here. One is our income tax rate, which we believe is too high. It has come down with tax reform, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, and so we're better than we used to be, but it's still way too high. So that's something that the governor is really focused on, is figuring out ways in which we can continue to drive that down to benefit all of Ohioans. On the other end is what you mentioned is the fracking, which is an exciting, growing area that could be very, very beneficial to the state of Ohio. It's still pretty early, and the geological studies and so on tell us that there's a lot there. And oil and gas companies are coming to Ohio and investing billions in leases and so on. So there's a pretty good indication that there's a lot of value in the natural resources that are particularly along the eastern part of the state, up around the Ohio River and somewhat west.
But fracking is not what's happening currently in the majority of Ohio in terms of the oil exploration that's going on right now, correct?
That's correct. There has been fracking of a type that has gone on for a while. This is very different. First of all, it is a much more sophisticated. It's much larger.
More capital intensive?
Much more capital intensive. Many millions of dollars per well. I mean, this is a very, very expensive proposition to get into. But the technology is phenomenal. I mean, they can go 8, 10, 12,000 feet down and then start drilling horizontally from that depth in the Utica Shale. And with the fracking process, it enables it to break open the shale, hold it open with this sand material that they use, and pull the oil and gas out.
And you've coupled in the same conversation fracking with income tax cuts.
Yeah. What's the connection?
let's talk about the connection.
The connection is very important because, again, this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. It takes many millions of years, as you know, for these things to develop. So what the government would like to do is try to capture some of the benefit of that natural resource, which is coming out of the ground in Ohio, and use it to help all Ohioans. So what we are proposing is that we're going to increase the severance tax rates on oil and gas, on oil principally. Gas actually would actually fluctuate. It's a little different structure. But the new revenue that would be a result of that would be put in an income tax reduction fund to drive the income tax rates down so that as one grows, the other goes down, remains revenue neutral on balance in terms of taxes, but it captures this value, some of this value for the benefit of all Ohioans. So it's a really interesting concept.
And it really does help Ohio's small businesses because Ohio's small businesses pay taxes on their business income at the highest marginal tax rates. So anytime you can reduce taxes for individuals and small business, it's a great thing.
And we are very, very low, as you mentioned already. Yes. Our severance tax on a barrel of oil is 20 cents. Oil sells for $100, $105, $110, or per barrel in the open market. So, I mean, it's a very, very small percentage. We think that should be a little bit higher.
And we're not going to see any fracking rigs or anything like that here in the Cincinnati area, but some of our listening audience along the eastern borders of our state will absolutely be subject to this, and there could be some real win-wins for them as well.
The furthest south that I'm aware of right now is about Athens County, where there's some exploration going on, which I know is within your reach here. And the thing is, too, is that this is all based on geological studies. So as they get more and more sophisticated, they're finding it is broader, deeper, wider, and some of it's gone further west than they originally thought. So it's still evolving.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner. I'm with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is BusinessWise. My guest today is Joe Testa. Joe is the tax commissioner for the state of Ohio. And Joe, we've been hearing a lot, seeing a lot about fracking, about the income tax cut. I think a lot of people wonder why those two topics are included in the same paragraph.
Sure. The connection between the two is that we believe that our income tax rates in Ohio are too high. We want to drive them down. One way in which we're going to be able to do that is by capturing some of the value of this great exploding industry in Ohio, this oil and gas exploration with fracking technology, very deep in the ground, very highly technical, but there's tremendous value there. And what we want to do is try to capture some of that, leverage it to some extent to drive the income tax rates down to benefit all of Ohioans. So that's the connection between the two.
So if I'm living in one of the communities on the eastern side of Ohio, thinking, well, wait a minute, why am I going to use our resources so that everyone in Ohio can benefit. But those communities are going to benefit tremendously, aren't
Absolutely.
They?
Absolutely. In the short run, there's a couple of things. One of is an impact fee. It's a no-interest loan process that puts $25,000 per well into the local community up front. That's part of our proposal. The reason why it's needed that way is because that's when the impact is. Because when the drillers come in, all of the impact on local
roads.
Jurisdictions, roads, police and fire and water and housing and all the things that are happening is very short-lived. It's only a couple of months, and then they move to another site. Normally, the revenue would not catch up for a couple of years, and that's way too late. So you have that. Plus, of course, you have job creation. You not only have the construction jobs when the sites are being built and all of that, but you have very highly technical, well-paid jobs that are in the oil and gas industry itself.
And not to mention the other economic development activities that will go on around there.
Income, sales tax collections from local housing.
And from the way I understand the way this will work is that as these wells become more valuable, because we have oil and gas being generated from them, then the local community will continue to reap the benefit of property tax.
Through the real estate structure, right. The real estate tax structure is more of a long-term thing, but it's very viable. Mm-hmm. So most of that goes to your local schools, social service agencies, local governments, townships, and so on, long-term as well.
So you're taking property right now that's being taxed at a very low value in many cases and turning it into a more valuable resource for those local communities.
That's right. And also remember, this is all below ground as well. So there's still activities going on the surface, you know, farming and other activities, except for the well pads themselves. So, you know, a lot of that will be undisturbed.
And a lot of the small businesses that are already in this industry, they're not going to be impacted at all by these additional taxes, correct?
No, they won't be negatively impacted at all. They'll be positively impacted. Actually, our proposal drives their taxes down. Our proposal leaves the oil tax the same severance tax as it is now, which is 20 cents a barrel, but reduces the tax on gas, on methane gas, to 1% instead of the 3 cents per 1,000 cubic feet. But for the really small producers that are less than 10,000 cubic feet, for those people who are in that business will know what that means, their tax goes to zero. And that's mostly what people are familiar with in Ohio. Mm-hmm. They'll see those little individual wells, you know, out on farms around the state and so on. And those are going to be protected. Their taxes are going to actually go down or be eliminated entirely for the small, really small producers. So we're only talking about focusing on this new technology, these high volume horizontal wells that are going to generate new revenue. And we want them to be successful. We want them to be profitable. We want them to create jobs. Of course we do. So our proposal raises it enough to accomplish income tax reduction, but not anti-competitive. We don't want to be driving businesses away.
And if you want to learn more about the income tax cut and the fracking, you can go to governor.ohio.gov, look for Transforming Ohio for Growth, an income tax cut. I'm Crystal Faulkner with Cooney Faulkner and Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Tom, something that unfortunately is on the rise is tax scams, fraud, that type of thing. And I'm actually very involved with Hamilton County Coalition to Stop Fraud, Scams, and Abuse. And this is an initiative that Hamilton County President Greg Hartman instituted a year or two ago to help county residents and really people in our region be more conscientious about people out there in our community that can harm them through fraud and scams and tax abuse.
In many cases, they utilize the preparation of the tax returns to do this. So supposedly, professional tax preparers will offer to prepare a tax return for a refund. They may give you excessive deductions, credits that you're not entitled to, in exchange for part of the refund.
The key here is you have to do your homework. Tax laws and the tax code have become so complicated, huge percentage of the people, a vast majority of the people use an outside preparer. So you just have to be sure that the one that you are using isn't a crook.
Look for someone who has a permanent establishment, hopefully a reputation, maybe somebody that you've got friends or colleagues that have used in prior years.
And look at their credentials. Take the time to do your homework. You can go on to the various state accountancy boards, Ohio, Kentucky, Indiana, and see whether or not these people are licensed. Make sure you ask if they have a prepare tax identification number. This is a new requirement that the IRS is making of all people that prepare tax returns. And there are certain types of substantiation that have to be made available by the people who get these PTIN numbers, including continuing education, which is very important for your tax preparer to know the tax laws.
And the unfortunate truth is that if someone is going to use your tax information to help defraud the IRS that they're going to share with you, they're probably going to use your personal ID information to defraud you as well.
And with the technology so available, it's no wonder that there is an increase in tax schemes and tax frauds. Anyone who claims that they are going to be paid based on a percentage of your refund, turn around and walk away. That is absolutely not someone you want to do business with. Also, never, ever allow your refund to go into your tax preparer's account. What'll happen is they'll tell you that your refund's only $500, but then when they actually submit the return to the IRS, it may really be $2,000. They'll give you your $500 and keep the rest.
Yeah, so make sure that you control that process by getting the refund directly.
And never respond to an email that you receive that is supposedly from the IRS. It looks very legitimate. They'll talk to you about there's an issue with your return and it's going to hold up your refund if you don't respond. The IRS never, ever reaches out to taxpayers through email. They never initiate a contact that way.
And if they promise you refunds and say low income, no documents, tax return, that's another indication of fraud.
Bottom line, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. And let me just give you another website you can take a look at. If you want to go to the Hamilton County website on this issue, it's just www.hamiltoncounty-co.org/fraud, or you can also call the IRS Criminal Investigation Unit at 513-263-3335 if you suspect fraud. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise, and today we're talking about a topic that we wrote about recently in our column in the Inquirer, and that's succession planning for a business. And Crystal, somebody wrote in and wondered when is the proper time to start their succession planning, and I guess our answer was it's never too early to start that. I think we've both had examples where unexpected events occurred that somebody had to have a succession plan and maybe didn't because of an untimely illness or death, or even if you're just planning for a transition to the next generation, it's good to start early and have a plan.
It sure is. And certainly by planning the transition that will happen in the future, you can take actions and really improve many of the business processes that you are entering into today. So as you mentioned, you never know when someone will be sick, God forbid, an untimely death. It's just very important to have that plan in place. And again, it's not a static plan. It's a process. It's something that evolves as your business grows and as you grow over time.
Yeah, one of the pieces to a business plan normally is that you develop processes so that if you're the founder and the CEO of a business, you can be replaced either by one or more people. And by having organized processes, it may make your life a lot easier before you get replaced because you'll have other people helping you out with some of your duties.
You mentioned these processes. The key here, Tom, in my mind at least, is to plan early. Even though it's never too early to start planning, certainly if you anticipate a transition event, you should start thinking about that at least 5 to 10 years before you want to exit the business.
And I think some of the big things you have to think about is, do you want to have your employees or your children succeed you in the business? Or do you want to sell the business when it's ready for you to leave the business? And part of that is, what's the value of the business?
Right. It's always a good idea to know what the value of your business is today so you can take steps and actions that will help enhance the value and grow the value over time. Another very important aspect that I think people need to be aware of is succession planning, transition planning, even though it's very personal, should really be vetted out through outside experts, people that you can surround yourself with to give you advice and help you think through the various alternative methods to transition your business. It can help save a lot of money, including tax money.
Well, many successful businesses that we work with have outside advisory boards. They aren't official boards of directors, but they're advisory boards, other business leaders that get to become knowledgeable about the business, and they can assist with the succession plan. They are more objective, usually, and they may assist the new successors when they take over the business.
When you mention new successors, and that's a very key component because you need to identify early in the process who those star players are. And you really need to keep the emotion out of the conversation because if it's a family business, you may not have a child that's going to be the best new leader. Think about others in the organization that may be better suited to run the entity and leave the emotions at the table.
Yeah, and maybe it's a team of people that need complementary skill sets. You know, not everyone has to be good at sales. Not everyone has to be good at engineering. But whatever your business is, there's probably certain talents that are necessary for the leaders of the business to have.
And then think about what your role is. Maybe you just want to pack it up and move south. Maybe you want to actually stay engaged and involved in the business. Where do you see yourself as you go through the transition process?
And also, how do you want to be compensated for that role? You need to think that through as well.
And then once you have a succession plan, review it often. Things change. The economy changes. People change. Make sure that you take steps to continually review and update your succession plan as your business evolves. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner, and Stevens. We give meaning to money. I'm Tom Cooney, and this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Carolyn Washburn. Carolyn is the editor and vice president of The Enquirer. And Carolyn, I'm sure this has been a very interesting time to be in your position in a newspaper. But you've got even more changes coming, haven't you, with the size of the newspaper, the physical size of the newspaper. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about the thought behind that.
Readers have told us for years, many, many years, that they really someday would love a smaller, more compact size. You know, and newspapers have gotten narrower over time, but you think about sitting at the breakfast table or on an airplane or whatever, trying to, you know, and the paper's flopping around. And so part of this will be, it'll be a really great reader convenience, and we're in the process of prototyping right now, and it feels really good. It is interesting when you do research on this that both news and advertising actually have as much or more impact on a smaller sheet than on a broad sheet, which is, so I'll take this, take a story that ran in the middle of a page on the big broadsheet, and it takes up a full page on the news size. And so that article or an ad, it has more impact. It feels more obvious. And so we can have more impact with our content that way. And in joining up with Columbus, which is one of the things we're doing too, this will be the first time this technology, and don't ask me to explain all of the press production technology, but this press technology will be used for the first time in the United States in this project. And we're doing it together with Columbus, which will allow us to save some money on the production side of things that we can use to invest in the journalism.
Well, back when I was 11 or 12 years old and carrying the Enquirer around in my on my bike in baskets, I would have liked to have a much smaller newspaper, I can assure you. Together with the size of the newspaper, you've also announced a change in terms of how you're going to do the online newspaper. Maybe you can share that with us, too.
This has been a debate in the industry for the last several years. And, you know, there are a lot of people who are choosing to read online or on a tablet or a smartphone instead of in print. I don't really care as long as people are engaged in the community and consume the information. But we have gotten to the point where now enough people are making those switch that, you know, now we have the print readers who are really paying for our content, and you have a growing number of digital users who are there a lot on our digital products who aren't paying for that content. And finally, a realization that you're not just paying for the convenience, you're paying for the content. Doing good journalism costs money. And so we're really going to be asking everybody who consumes our content, regardless of whether it's a smartphone or a tablet or the website or whatever, to also participate in paying for that content. So there'll be some new subscription combinations and things like that. We haven't set all those prices yet.
I guess as a print newspaper reader, probably lots of people my age still read the actual print. That's not going away, is it?
No, absolutely not. People still, hundreds of thousands of people a day still read the print newspaper and are very clear that they still have passion for my newspaper is what they call it. So there will still be a good, healthy print newspaper.
Well, Carolyn, we're out of time today, but tomorrow maybe you can come back and talk to us about some of the issues that the Inquirer is going to be writing about in the next year. For BusinessWise, I'm Tom Cooney. I'm with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney. This is BusinessWise. Our guest again today is Carolyn Washburn. Carolyn is the editor and vice president of the Inquirer. Carolyn, what are some of the issues that you're going to focus on at the Inquirer in the upcoming year?
Covering issues is my favorite part of the job. It's why I got into it, and it's trying to help. We really look at it in terms of helping people think through decisions they will have to make. So we look at every one of our beats, we call it, and think about what are the issues going on that beat that people will have to make decisions about or be smarter about in this next period of time and really focus energy on that. So some examples, Mark Kernute, who covers social issues and minority affairs, just started what will be an ongoing in-depth look at the community of Avondale. It's sort of a case study for a lot of efforts to sort of rebuild neighborhoods that once were grand and have been struggling. And so we're going to kind of use Avondale as a case study. That's one example. Laura Baverman has been looking at, will continue to look at kind of the ecosystem of entrepreneurship in our region and what things, not to introduce us to entrepreneurs, but also to look at what government and what other big businesses need to do. What does education need to do to support entrepreneurship and really create an ecosystem? You know, this is a huge presidential election year. We'll be looking at the issues that people care about and trying to understand how that candidate's positions may affect us and what people here want the candidates to address. Northern Kentucky is at the cusp of a lot of change right now. Tremendous change in leadership. People who have been leading institutions. There are changes at Newport on the Levee and the River Center, commercial development, expansion of Gateway. Northern Kentucky is really also on the cusp of a lot of change. And so we're going to be just looking at who the leadership is, what the vision is, and some of the initiatives and projects and what the implications are not only for Northern Kentucky but for the region as a whole. I mean, those are just a couple, but we have dozens of issues like that.
As a journalist, when you look at those issues and expose the public to the issues, do you try to expose a particular point of view, or you just try to get the facts out and the perspective out?
We're trying to identify issues that people may not have understood were even issues. There's some standard questions or angles we always go after. Who are the various stakeholders, even stakeholders you might not have expected would be affected by an issue? What's the historical context of the issue? What's played out in the past over time on that issue? What's the geographic context? What's happening in other parts of the state or the country or the world that we can learn from? Almost no issue is unique to us. So what can we learn from in other places? Have people committed to some things in the past, and now we need to sort of go back and review and hold them accountable? So we're trying to educate in those kinds of ways.
For BusinessWise, I'm Tom Cooney. I'm with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is BusinessWise. My guest today is Mike Monahan. Mike is the CEO and Executive Director of Live Success Seminars, but he is also a best-selling author. And Mike, your book, From the Jungle to the Boardroom, is a book about leadership, it's about decision-making, that's based on your own Vietnam service and your role as a business leader here in our community. Let's talk about one aspect that I know that you discuss in the book, and that's about decision-making.
Yes, my book's based on, I spent a year in Vietnam, and I was a point man, I was a scout dog handler. And so I was first man on patrol for a year. And I learned a lot. I was 20 years old. And when I came back home, I don't think I knew all the lessons I learned. But as a result of living a long life now, there were three things I had to ask myself. Am I prepared? Am I safe? And am I alone? And in the book, that's what I explore because it really pertains to decision making. Am I prepared? Oftentimes, when we don't have courage, we don't want to make important decisions. And so we spend all our time in preparation. You know, we just keep fixing to get ready, as a friend of mine says. And I see people spend their whole life because they're afraid to make important decisions based on fear, which really doesn't keep them from making the decision. And what they're embarrassed about that in a sense. And so they say, I'm getting ready. So if I just, once I get done with school and once I get some money together and once I do this. So part of decision making has a backstage to it. Am I safe is the second one. Once again, going to the idea of fear. I tell people, unless a lion's chasing you down, it's just a feeling. There's no reason.
Right. Fear is a feeling.
It's That's right. Yes. It's not a dictation to do anything. And then am I alone? The truth of the matter is, yes, they're your decisions. You have to make those alone. But it doesn't mean you have to be lonely. You can have a great circle of influence. So when they say it's lonely at the top, I disagree. I have a lot of people around me. But when it comes to decision-making that are my decision, I'm alone on that. I think the missing ingredient is courage, and I don't know anyone who can sustain courage on their own. We need good people around us.
Don't you think, just on that point, because if you look around at our society, so many things that we seem to talk about a lot is just around these kinds of things. The missing item, it seems like, is there's no execution. There's a lot of talk, but no action.
Well, what I notice is, and I don't watch a lot of news because I get overwhelmed with it, is the reality is we spend 90% of our time focused on the problem, and anytime you do that, the problem just gets bigger. Looking at a problem does not make you a solution maker. And so if we're going to become solution-oriented, we have to really protect that.
Well, how do you do that? How do you go from that place where you're burdened by all the fear, you just can't make the decision? Do you help people in the book and even in your seminars? Do you show people how to get past that?
I think what I try to convey is it doesn't go away. Everybody's hoping something's going to go away, Eli. So if I can give you a set of tools and show you with a different mindset how to navigate, then you can get all your needs met in a more appropriate way. So I tell people, that imagine that when you're born, a lion's born with you and it goes with you all the time. If you don't feed that lion, eventually it's really going to get aggressive. Well, our needs are the same thing. When we don't feed our needs, and most people don't ask for what they need straight up, we do it in code. We think somebody else is going to figure it out. And then we really get aggressive, and then we start to cut off all the opportunities that are in front of us. So it's really to work harder on yourself than you work on anything, because your success is going to be determined by the image you hold of yourself. If you don't think you're good enough, somewhere along the line, you're going to blow yourself up.
So the book, Mike, is called From the Jungle to the Boardroom. And where can people get the book if they're interested?
They can pick it up at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, 800 CEO. You can get it online.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner. I'm with Cooney Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is BusinessWise. My guest today is Mike Monahan. Mike is the CEO and the Executive Director for Life Success Seminars. He also is an author. His book, From the Jungle to the Boardroom, was designated as the number one bestseller by Inc. magazine. Congratulations, Mike. But you also have another book, it's an e-book, called Occupy Your Future, which really talks about personal responsibility.
There's a number of cable TV shows and news shows you can watch, and, you know, whether it's Tea Party or Occupy, everybody's blaming everybody else. I believe until each of us take personal responsibility from top to bottom, we really aren't going to change much in the world. And so I sat down with the book, whether it's, you know, physical health, from eating to finances. I mean, all the traps are out there waiting on you, you know, anything from the biggie meal that gets you eating and drinking more, to credit cards that lure you in at 0% interest. All those things are designed to get you hooked on what they're selling. And the reality is we got to decide for ourselves what kind of life we want to live and decide how we are engaged in our daily life. It's easy to get out of control and then think somebody's going to bail you out.
So that last point that you made, it just seems like we hear so much more about that recently. Do you think that people, businesses, whatever, have come to expect a bailout? Do you think that we've moved in the direction where we don't hold people accountable, we don't hold people responsible for their own actions, and then we come along and we rescue them? Parents do that to kids sometimes, too.
I think we're so polarized that it's easy to go to extreme, but I think the truth is there are people who really do need help in getting out. And at the same time, somewhere in the middle, we've lost all sense of reality. And so I think it's going to take some really great leadership on a lot of fronts to say, hang on a minute, we can't ball all this together. The truth is, there are people need a way to figure out how to sustain themselves. You know, we need jobs and we need things. I don't have the answer, except I know it really starts with personal responsibility, which includes being responsible to other people. So I have a responsibility to help.
Well, how do you, as a parent, how do you start teaching them personal responsibility? I think a lot of people assume they're teaching their children personal responsibility, but there's really no action plan. Do you recommend some specific strategies to to take part in that?
Really, you teach personal responsibility as soon as they're born. The quicker you teach children that they have the power of choice and consequences, they're going to learn it. Most parents want to hold off until the kid's 18 or 21, and I've done some real bizarre stuff helping them stay irresponsible.
By then, their attitudes are already fixed,
well,
correct?
That's right, and they got it from us. And some of the things we learned is to sit down and create agreements with our kids. Just like if you buy a house, you have a mortgage agreement. We eventually learned a tool, sitting down with the kids saying, this is what's going on. Do you think it's appropriate? And usually they say no. And so then when this happens, what do you think the consequence ought to be? And they'll tell you the consequence. And oftentimes our kids told us a rougher consequence than I would have chosen. And then we signed the agreements. And some of them we hung on the refrigerator. And so then when it happened, I wasn't the bad guy as a parent. I go, hang on a minute. I'm just keeping my part of the agreement. You agreed that you would not do this. If you did, you agreed that this should happen. I'm just keeping my part of the agreement, sure. Which says I'm. And so it really begins to teach them that they're responsible for their own behavior.
Well, that's great advice, Mike. And if people would like to learn more about life success, or if they would like to get the ebook Occupy Your Future, where can they get that?
Any online, Amazon, 800 CEO, any of those. And then Life Success, you can get on the web. It's www.lifesuccessseminars.com.
I'm Crystal Faulkner with Cooney Faulkner and Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Kendra Ramirez. Kendra is the social media and mobile apps director at Ascendum. Kendra, I've known you for a few years, and the whole idea of social networking, using social applications, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, has just exploded during that time. How are businesses using these types of tools to really grow their market share?
Yeah, I'm so passionate about this topic. I get asked a lot, you know, usually it's a customer calling and saying, should I go do a Facebook page? I'm like, okay, well, what do you mean by do a Facebook page? You know, I usually try to back that up and say, let's actually learn about what are the business objectives and business challenges that you're having. Because several people out there would immediately just slap a Facebook page together for them, and that's where the conversation stops. I think you need to take a full approach and look at the total picture, like a holistic picture of the whole organization. Because a lot of times social media sets inside of marketing. It doesn't breathe through the whole organization.
So in other words, it's just one aspect of an overall bigger marketing plan.
Absolutely. It has to be. If you just stick it inside of marketing, it really can't fully bloom and really leverage everything from sales and recruiting and customer service and human resources and communications. It really needs to breathe throughout the organization.
Well, certainly it makes sense that you'd have to have a consistent message across all the different platforms. But now there's just so many different social media platforms by themselves. Are there some that are better than others, or does that depend upon your target audience?
Great question. And that's exactly my first response when someone says, should we do a Facebook page? Is who's the target audience? What is the clear business objective? And that's where the whole return on investment happens, right? A lot of companies are saying, you know, I need to be able to prove results. That's great. Let's start looking at the business applications and objectives and those key principles we want to make sure and include inside of some of these social media sites. You don't have to do them all, because if your target audience isn't there, it's kind of a waste of time.
Well, the good news is it's pretty easy to get on that social media, but maybe that's the bad news too if you don't do it right.
Correct. Absolutely. I see a lot of people starting a business page in a like Facebook profile on accident. They didn't know any better. And instead of actually designing a business page around what they're trying to actually accomplish, you know, so I've had clients recently, because we have been doing this for so long now, they're calling me and saying, all right, what can I turn off? What can I stop doing? Because I feel like we've just spread ourselves too thin and we're just not executing well on it. So what can we actually pull back?
How do you recommend a company who, maybe it's even a small company, because I do think the internet technology really levels the playing ground in a lot of respects, but how do you recommend a company get started in determining and defining how they can use social media as a part of their overall marketing strategy?
It doesn't really matter the size of the organization. It is clear objectives, clear target audience, and which tools will actually get them there. Sometimes it's social media. Sometimes it's, you know, webinars and events and radio shows and, you know, those other activities. So you have to look again at that whole picture of what are they doing from a sales and marketing standpoint.
So I'm on Facebook.
Yes.
Tom's on Facebook, but not as often as I am. And I guess the other question I have as a business owner, our firm has our own Facebook page and so forth, but I also have my own Facebook page personally. Mm-hmm. Is that a problem?
No, not at all. Not at all, right? You know, especially us, we're so, you know, extroverts. We enjoy sharing our lives. And it's just, you have to have a personal strategy on your personal page. Who do you want to accept as a friend? If you truly want to draw that line in the sand and say, you know what, this is strictly for family and friends. This is not going to be where I'm going to accept client invites. And just send a message back to them, hey, I've decided to use LinkedIn for my professional connections. And that's okay. But we need to draw the line in the sand, because I've had a lot of people come and like, I'm connected to clients and I don't want them to know what I'm doing on the weekend. And just having a strategy, either personally or from the business page, having a strategy, a very clear strategy.
Well, Kendra, we're out of time today, but I do want to continue the conversation tomorrow. Thank you for being our guest, and thank you for listening to BusinessWise. I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your trusted business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Today, our guest is Kendra Ramirez. Kendra is our social media expert. She's also the social media and mobile apps director for Ascendum. And Kendra, you've been in this space for, what, 6 or 7 years? You kind of were the first person that I knew of, at least in this area, that really concentrated on social media and how to use it for business purposes. What are some of the successes you've seen businesses have with social media?
I've got clients anywhere between 8% and 22% increase in revenues that we can directly measure because of the activities and strategy that we had around using some social media tools along with some other tactics inside their organization. And some of the ones that come to mind for sure is a large national bank that I worked with. We worked in the commercial division of the bank. We did a LinkedIn session of how do they effectively use LinkedIn for warm connections. And one gentleman in his target audience that he was trying to have a meeting with was a COO of a bank. He had been trying for 6 months to meet with the COO. So in the session, because I always ask people to bring a couple of prospects that they'd like to, you know, be able to leverage and do some research on. And in the session, he realized that he knew someone that knew this guy. He just had never had that a capability of finding that information. So I say, you know, LinkedIn's kind of like your Rolodex, but it's on steroids. And so he was able very quickly to make a call to his friend, say, hey, I see that you know the COO of this bank. I've been trying to do some commercial banking with him. You know, I'd really love the opportunity if you'd help me out. Well, of course, the gentleman helped him out. He landed that appointment within 4 weeks of our session. And then within another 4 weeks, they actually turned into a $4 million contract for them. And that's just one very, very small instance. You know, another one from a recruiter perspective, a client hired 40 people through using social media. They had 110 hires last year. 40 of them came through using social media, a variety of tools. And that actually saved the business over $100,000 versus job boards and versus outsourcing some of those positions.
So it really is a useful tool that businesses should, if they're not already considering incorporating into their overall plan.
Absolutely, without a doubt. And it just, you know, always goes back to time and resources. You know, we're not able to execute on absolutely everything on our plate. So let's get to the things that we can execute on, but execute well on. I see a lot of companies, I, you know, go and look them up and do the research and I look at their blog and it hasn't been touched since April.
Well, it's also easy on platforms like LinkedIn. You may have 20 people in your organization that are on LinkedIn. How important is it to make sure that there's a consistent message out there about your company?
I do a kind of a social media audit, if you will. I go through and look at all the things of where their name resides and their brand resides. And looking through LinkedIn is a wonderful opportunity to brand the organization in an individual profile. Too many times it's written as a resume, and that's okay if you're a job seeker. But if you're in business development or recruiting, it really needs to be very clear marketing message. You can actually have the About Us section from your website in the LinkedIn profile and versus the actual skill set of the person that they're trying to accomplish in the role. You can use SlideShare inside of LinkedIn and do a capabilities presentation as long as it's something that you feel comfortable in the public eye. So there's a wonderful, wonderful way to have that brand consistency and mapping that out for them so that all the employees can have that same talk and then understanding that every site that they go to, they're getting and receiving that same message.
Kendra, let's talk about the not so successful stories that you might have. Some don't that
yes.
people should think about.
Yes. But yeah, some of the don'ts, you know, I've seen this time and time again where, say, a small business owner outsources their social media someone and they throw it over the wall. It has to be. It's okay to outsource, but it has to be very collaborative. There better be meetings about the content. There was a restaurant in the, say, 100-mile radius of Cincinnati that had outsourced it. And unfortunately, the person posted, hey, buffet special on Tuesday. Tuesday and people were showing up and there actually wasn't a buffet on Tuesdays at all, right? So it kind of blew up in their face.
Not good.
So making sure and having that true collaborative partnership with your consultant.
Kendra, we're out of time, but if people would like to have more information or find you, reach you, how can they do that?
Through my email at kendra.ramirez@ascendum.com or phone at 513-615-3907.
Thank you for listening to Business Wise. I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your trusted business advocate.